Sutherland, but it's Faheen who's barely clear up the hill, and he is a machine. Faheen maintains his unbeaten record, and it's a treble for Willie Mullins and Ruby Walsh. Faheen's a champion. Arctic Forest.
Hello, welcome back to our look ahead to the Cheltenham Festival. Yes, on the From the Horse's Mouth. And I'll just check notes. The Cheltenham Countdown, we're calling this one, as we have been for the last 4 weeks. This is week number 5. And Ruby Walsh and Rory De Largy are once again back to look ahead to 3 races this week. We're going to look ahead to a couple of mares races and a Triumph Hurdle, in which a mare could well feature in our chats. Now, remember, we are non-runner money back in all races at the Cheltenham Festival. So if you're having a bet and the horse doesn't make it to the race, money back. Simple as that. Check out paddypower.com for all the details. Also, if you're watching this on YouTube, well done. Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel. It is available. I would urge you to check out Shark Power. It's a brilliant new show concerning the certain shark. John Joseph Hanlon sending Hewick over to win the American Grand National. It's a really good watch. Paddy went down to the yard. They had some great fun. Lots of cups of tea, lots of toast. Puts a lot of butter, Ruby, on his. Have you watched it yet?
You wouldn't think it to look at him.
You wouldn't think it, but he puts. I was watching it.
He's a flora man.
I was like, did they have to re-edit this? Because he's consistently putting butter on his toast in about 6 different shots, but it's really good.
Did he butter both sides?
Well, maybe, because all I saw was him buttering toast for about 30 minutes. But very, very good. Hewick, obviously winner of the American Grand National. Now, remember, as I said, check this out on the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel. Subscribe, like and comment with a question. And if you do, you have a chance of winning a 50 quid free bet as Nathan Collingwood. Well done, Nathan Collingwood has just won. And this is his question for both of you. Which is your jockey to follow at this year's festival? And is there a jockey who you think might get their first festival win? Speaking to a former jockey first.
Well, she'd have to think Michael O'Sullivan. Well, has he had a festival winner? Don't think so.
I don't think so, no.
Not as a professional anyway. So we'll go with that line in case he has had as an amateur, but I can't think of one. You'd have to think with Marine National and Goodland, he has two really good rides, as well as what he could ride in handicaps with a £5 claim to go with it. So he would look like someone that might ride the first festival winner. A jockey to keep an eye out on. It's fairly obvious. It's what yard gets hot. That's what riding winners at Cheltenham is about. Who's riding for the hottest yard? And you would have to think the obvious one will be Paul Tennant.
Yeah, makes sense. Rory, anything to add?
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with any of that. There's a question elsewhere about what claiming jockeys to look out for, and Michael O'Sullivan is right at the top of that list. He's done tremendously well this season, and obviously, you know, he's young and hasn't been seen much in the UK, but he's shown this year that he doesn't need his claim to be riding Grade 1 winners, so that £5 is going to be very useful. Paul Tynan obviously has got the choices book of rides. Of course, Danny Mullins will be picking up plenty of interesting spares as well, so that'll be interesting to see if Danny can knock in a few as well. Waited a long time for his first festival winner, Danny, and hit the bar a few times as well, but they've been coming easier recently.
Remember when he was with Jim Bulger, when he first came on the scene, Danny Mullins, he was a superstar. He was always going to be jump jockey, Danny?
Or? I don't know. I suppose when he was young and light and small, he was on the flat, won a couple of Galway miles from stall 1 and 2. Takes a bit of doing. Look, obviously, and you can see his judgment of pace and his tactics. You can see his flat education or chat. He's flat riding coming back in him. He's like, he does tend to ride, or can ride a lot of winners in the front. He's not one dimensional, but he has a great understanding of pace and speed. And I think that comes from learning his trade on the flat, making very quick, sharp decisions that flat jockeys have to make.
Yeah, and from the outside in, no idea. It seems like unbelievable attitude, because it's not easy watching Paul win all these races, because Danny would ride at Willie's, yeah? So
Danny's only issue is there's only 7 days in the week. 24 hours in the day. That's his biggest issue. He could find an 8 day and a couple of extra hours, it'd suit him better.
All right, let's get on to the Mayor's Novice Hurdle, the Don't Run Mayor's Novice Hurdle. Ruby, have to start with you. Willie Mullins and Mayor's. The Mayor's Hurdle, the Miss Paddy Power Mayor's Chase. This race record is unbelievable. What is it about Willie Mullins and Mayor's?
That I don't know. He's always trained Mayor's, and obviously training a Mayor is slightly different to training a Geldon, and I suppose his father before him, Paddy Mullins, trained a lot of good mares. Willie has trained a lot of good mares. Definitely has the key to training mares, but lots of people do. But I'd say Willie has looked at the programme as well and realised that there is a good financial programme for mares. So he actively goes about buying mares and having mares in the yard. And also, the beauty of having mares for National Hunt owners is they actually have a residual value. So whatever a mare costs, you'll be hoping that you will get part of your initial investment back, which you are most likely not going to get with a gelding.
No, they don't tend to make a huge amount after racing. Let's start with Astro Diamond. Two wins, two placed efforts in Grade Ones. She's the standard bearer, Clissutton, at the moment.
Yeah, of course she is. And she was good at Ferry House. Danny rode her in the Sol Arena when that was over 2-2, and she toughed it out well. That was a slowly run race, and she quickened well to win. Came from a long way off the pace behind Fast Elviga and Yolette Tomp at Leopardstown over Christmas, had run in the Royal Bond. She does set the standard. She's a very good mare. She'll have a penalty to carry because of her Sol Arena win, but that's not necessarily a negative. Limoney carried a penalty as well, so did Lorena. So Astro Diamond will look to do that too.
Night and Day, she's in the double green, yeah?
She is, yeah.
They have a serious stable for Cheltenham now emerging.
They do, don't they? And maybe Daryl would be an answer to your first question. Paul can't ride all the Simon Muneer Isaacs who had one, so Daryl will come in for plenty of rides in those colours as well. But look, she had her first run in the Grade 1 Mayor's Novice Hurdle at Ferry House last Easter. Her next run was when she won a maiden hurdle at Clonmel. She's a filly who's always worked well and she's going the right direction. But trying to pin one of Willie's in the Mayor's Novice Hurdle, he could run seven and most will have earned their place in the field.
Yeah, and speaking of one of those who probably will run, Lot of Joy we think might run. There won't be many horses who win this race who are gambled on for the Monday night handicap at Galway. I think she was a big gamble for that race on her debut. She used to run in Sweden, didn't she?
She did, and she was just touched off in the Cesaro, which as well, Danny Tudhope brought her from a bad draw, and she ran really well. She finished one of Echoes and Rain. Obviously, Waterville won the race, but look, she was her jumping let her down in Cork. She missed the third last and the second last, but I like the way your thinking came and beat her. She was 2-3 over 2.5 miles at Leopardstown at Christmas, but she looked more at home over 2 at Ferry House, and she's learning to settle. She's a really good filly, and she's going the right way, and a couple of runs over jumps have calmed her down a bit.
OK, well, there's just a few from Clissutton. Rory, aptly enough, Lucia ran last weekend on Sunday, and she was very impressive. What was the strength of that race?
That's a big question, really. I mean, it looked a decent enough race for listed level, but the two who had official ratings, the full brother to Lola Lallygag and Western Zephyr, were disappointing in the end. They dropped away to finish third and fifth, I think, and beaten quite a long way by her. The runner-up was a 40-1 shot, who had shown quite a lot of ability when winning on his hurdles debut. Then probably bounced in the back of that because he'd been off the track for almost 3 years prior to that. So maybe the runner-up's a better horse than we give him credit for. But yeah, if you look at the level of form behind, it's perhaps a little bit weak. But again, visually, she absolutely cruised through that race. When she was asked to put it to bed, she quickened up very smartly. The only blemish really was guessing at the last where she twisted in the air and landed awkwardly and Nico could have found himself going out the side door. But aside from that, she was very good. As she said, a little bit difficult to nail that diamond. She's unbeaten now. She showed plenty in bumper. She won a very good, a graded bumper at Sandown this time last year. And she's gone from strength to strength. She had an accident, I think, in the summer. Nicky Henderson was mentioning that yesterday, where he said she came very close to having to be put down, but has made a remarkable recovery to win both starts. Both of those in listed company as well, because he's sort of had a press on with her. She won at Newbury first time out and then that race at Exeter. She just looks to have a load of talent. It's not that difficult to knock the level of the horses she's beaten compared to the competitiveness of some of the graded mares hurdles in Ireland this season. But she does look like she sort of stands head and shoulders of those among the home contingent. And she's a very exciting mare to go forward with.
Forgive my ignorance, but would she, if she was running the Supreme, be Nicky Henderson's best hope of winning that? Were she to be rerouted for that?
She would be, I think, as it stands at the moment. It is a possibility. It was talked of after the race that she might go Supreme, and Nico de Boinville seemed to be reasonably keen to head in that direction. I don't think, you know, Nicky said there's plenty of time to talk about that in the meantime. I do think he's pretty much decided he wants to go the mare's route. He's had a mare go a favourite for the Supreme in the past and disappointed a little bit. And I suspect he'd want to keep to mare's company. So she could switch. And it's something to bear in mind if you're backing her at a short price for the mare's novice, that she does have that entry in the Supreme. She doesn't have an entry in the mare's at the moment because there are no entries as yet. But I think that's probably where she goes, and she deserves to be favourite. But as you've heard from Ruby there, there are plenty of horses snapping at her heels in the Willie Mullinger. There are also several in the Elliott yarn and other Irish stables as well. So, you know, it's not clear blue sea behind her, as it were.
No. She was very impressive at Exeter, as you said, but non-runner money back anyway, if you want to back her for the Supreme. Ruby, Nakini, C'est La Vie, either of those good enough?
Nakini had a good run in Down Royal and hasn't run since. C'est La Vie did well at Punchestown. That was over 2.5 and probably got a little bit found out maybe in the Sol Arena. But look, she still has earned her right to line up and she'd probably take her chance. But Nakini probably would be open to a little bit more improvement than C'est La Vie.
Okay. Princess Zoe, Ruby. This would be a hell of a story, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would, and brings incredible platform to the table. Probably, look, some people might argue that she's regressed a little bit in the flat. I think the emergence of Kyprios has probably forced her to regress a little bit. Races have been run a little bit differently and they've just become better races. The Gold Cup races on the flat, or the Cup races even on the flat. But, yeah, look, Princess Zoe, her jumping didn't blow me away in Punchestown. Lady Bank nearly beat her. It was a dead heat. All right, Princess Zoe slowed down to jump the last, but Rachel Blackmore dropped her whip on Ladybank. So, you know, it's 6-1, half a dozen at the other as to which one could have won. So a dead heat probably suited both. But she has to improve a bit jumping-wise for me anyway, PK. Yeah. Now, I know it's on the new course. There'll only be two hurdles in the last 7 furlongs, but there's 3 in a row down the back straight. And if you miss all 3, it puts you in such a bad position.
We have seen inexperienced horses at big prices. I'm not saying Princess Zoe will be a big price. Finished well in this race and for Willie Mullins. He had a couple
no
of
moments. Experience.
Yeah, literally, yes. No. Yeah,
Concertista, first time out. Eglin the scene, the Soy with one run. So, yeah, look, it is a race that can throw up a shock, but a big price shock as well.
Yeah, for sure. It'd be interesting to see if there are any unraced horses in the entries. Rory, to you, Gordon, you mentioned that he's obviously got a strong hand. Liberty Dance, deeply superficial. Halka du Tabert, Harmonia Maker, they could all rock up here.
They could. A couple of those are entered at Sandown in a Grade 2 this weekend. It'll be interesting to see which of them go and how they get on. Liberty Dance is one of those. I would have thought she's less likely to go given she ran at the Dublin Racing Festival. But she's the one I like of Gordon's. She was only 6th at Down Royal in what I think is the Volée La Vedette, the Grade 3, which Ruby's made mention of already. That's a race that's worked out well. Nakini was 2nd to Magical Zoe there. You had the Model Kingdom behind, C'est La Vie behind that. And on her hurdles debut, Liberty Dance, I think, was 6th. But that was first time out of a hurdle, straight into a really competitive Grade 3. And she's improved since. I thought she ran really well in the Paddy Mullins Mare's Handicap hurdle. She had a handicap rating of 129 going into that. That tends to be full of reasonably well-handicapped mares. The 3 who beat her all were better placed than her in the race. She came from further back than all of them. She was giving them all the guts of a stone as well. And I thought that was a good run. I thought she was doing her best work at the finish. I thought she would come forward from it again. And she's sort of a 16-1 shot in the all-in market. I thought she was of more interest than a couple of others you mentioned. They're deeply superficial runs in the Sim Connors, doesn't she? And she needs to find a little bit more. Halka to Tarbit is an interesting one in Kenny Alexander's colours. She might progress again. But I thought the one that was value, because she'd been beaten last time out, I thought got under the radar a little bit, was Liberty Dance. And it'd be interesting to see who, if any, Gordon sends to Sandown for that.
Do you think they could do the both trips? Is it a case of they run there on Saturday, they're likely to go to Cheltenham?
I think so. I think it's, you know, it's the timing's okay.
25 days still, is it? Saturday, yeah. 3 weeks.
That meeting at Kempton.
The Adonis meeting.
That used to throw up and hasn't been so rich in recent years. But I remember one year that threw up 4 or 5 winners at the festival when the going was on the quick side. So, you know, the timing isn't bad as long as you've got the right programme for it. And if you're trying to sort out a group of novices and find out who's your best chance for Cheltenham, then it helps to try them on the track.
Fair enough. Jatara, listed bumper winner, okay run in the Sol Arena, I'm assuming from that Jeski Jet family.
Yeah, again, the Sol Arena form is obviously coming to the fore as well, because you've got Ashro Diamond one there. I thought Jatara ran well. She was well placed, it has to be said, but she ran well on her hurdles debut. She seemed to find her level in bumpers. She was useful, but no better in bumpers. But I thought she ran very well, despite the fact that high definition interfered with her a couple of times. In the jumping department at Leopardstown, I thought she ran really well there. and she backed that up with a second in the Sol Arena. So I do like her. I think she's a player that she's liable to go there. And as you've mentioned, she comes from a very good family. They seem to be loads of them, and they all seem to be winners.
They do. Every single one. They all begin with J.
It's a great pedigree, isn't it?
It is. It's a couple of mares, I think. It's not just the one. Yeah, it's gone very, very strong. Jeski, Jet, anything beginning with J. That Jessica Harrington usually trains. Anything else worth a mention before we get decisions?
La Malmaison for Gavin Cromwell is a big price for this. She ran very well on her hurdles debut, disappointed second time, and then bounced back to form when only beaten narrowly on her last run. She's in at Sandown as well, and again, if she makes the trip there, she'd be interesting as well. I thought she was, for one of the outsiders, she could easily come forward. Ruby's made this point already as well. There's a lot of depth, or there's a lot of potential depth in the mare's novice department. You don't necessarily see exactly how talented they are at this stage, but a lot of these horses are going to bloom between March and May.
Yeah.
And some of them will improve, you know, a stone and a half.
Day.
So it's difficult. These are, if you look at the ratings of the horses going forward here, a lot of horses hitting around the 130 mark who will be, you know, mid-140s in a month's time. And it's difficult to tell which of those have reached their limit already and which are just about to take off. So it's a more open race than it looks.
Okay. Well then, Ruby, tell us the one that hasn't been seen in a race course yet that's going to finish third at 66-1.
I haven't seen it. I think Magical Zoe, we probably haven't talked about enough. She did well to win that Father La Vedette at Down Royal. Adrian Heskin rode her, and she came home really well to get the better of Nikini. But of Willie's, if you're sticking me to the spot,
I am.
I'd probably go with Lot of Joy.
Lot of Joy. Yeah. Okay, maiden winner, but obviously very good on the flat. So Lot of Joy for Ruby. Rory?
Just a quick, getting back to Magical Zoe. Do you know if there's been an issue with her since, or is this just a typical Henry de Bromhead?
I think it was a Henry de Bromhead ploy. I'm thinking back to Down Royal, and I'm almost certainly kind of said that that'll be it. She, I think, wants better ground, so he had pulled the plug on her for the winter and was hoping to have her back in the spring to go again. And obviously, this race leads to Fairy House. Last year, Love Envoy went from Cheltenham back to Fairy House, which ran to Brandy Love. The grade one for mares, novices, is in Fairy House. So the structure of this race works. It's a grade two. There's penalties for... Will Luché have a penalty for being a listed winner? Or is it only for graded?
No, only graded winners.
Only graded winners. So Astro Diamond has the penalty. But when you look at mares' records in general at the novice hurdles of the festival, this race is another one of those additions that actually gives more horses a chance, because three have won the Supreme, none have won the Ballymore. So you might say Luché is a loss, but I'm not sure mayor's records really mean any mayor is a loss from an officer.
Fair enough. Yeah. Give us one then.
Yes, I'm just getting back to Magical Zoe. Assuming this has been the plan, she is potentially under the radar because the way the rating system works, because her race came in November, I've looked at the sort of time form ratings for this, they'll be same if you're looking for the Racing Post ratings or official ratings. She's behind a lot of these in terms of what she's achieved. But actually, the form of that race has worked out tremendously well. She's got a lot of good mares in behind her. And if you decide to update those ratings based on how the race has worked out, she'd be near the top. So she might just... I mean, she's not a terribly short price. She's about 10 or 12 to 1. But you could argue that she's a lot closer to the top of the tree than she looks. And she's also the kind of the mare, she turns up without another run. She might just get pushed further down the pecking order because people will look at the ratings and go, well, this one's got a stone to find.
Yeah.
And she doesn't really. But so she's a very interesting one.
But if Orr Blackmore is declared on top of her as
well.
Well,
yeah, you know,
that double-figure odds may not be double-figure odds on the day. The beauty of non-runner money back. I'm putting you down for Magical Zoe as your selection.
Go on then.
Okay, thank you very much, Rory. And a lot of joy for Ruby. Right, that's the lads' thoughts on the Mare's Novice Hurdle. We're going to look out to the Triumph shortly, but a reminder, do subscribe to the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel where you get all this and loads more and a chance to win a 50 quid free bet simply by commenting with your question for next week's show. Quick break and we're back with the Triumph.
Betting can add a little excitement to any sporting event.
But only if it's done safely, responsibly and within our means.
Never gamble when angry or feeling low.
Set yourself a limit for time, money or both.
No matter what the problem is, gambling is never.
Is never.
It's never the answer.
There is always someone to talk to when you feel gambling is becoming a stress.
Check out responsiblegaming.paddypower.com.
And welcome back. Right, straight away, question for Ruby and Rory from Dean McCann. Now, Rory Ruby, do you think there should be an age or experience limit on bumpers? For example, I feel it would be beneficial to racing if horses do not spend a year in bumpers if they're aged, for example, 5 or have had a run in France or in a point-to-point. Straight to you, Rory. It's a good question, Dean.
Yeah, well, first of all, there is a limit currently on what age you can run in bumpers and how much experience you can have. Although a difference between Britain and Ireland, of course, and that's maybe we need to have some sort of harmonisation of rules. As Ruby said in the previous show, if you run in an AQPS race in France, you can't then run in a bumper in Ireland because it's deemed to be a flat race. Whereas if you go to England, those races are deemed to be bumpers, so you can run in a bumper again. If you've run over hurdles in Ireland, you can run in a bumper after that. You can't do that in England or Scotland or Wales. So, you know, the rules are different in different places, and maybe there should be harmonisation. I mean, clearly there are two different interpretations of what an AQPS race is, and there shouldn't be. So yeah, the two authorities should decide what they are between them and act accordingly. I guess the issue has been a lot of talk about whether good horses, especially horses with point-to-point form, are wasting a season in bumpers. But there's nothing you can do about that in terms of legislation, in my view. Unless you'd need to build up an entirely different programme. You'd have a bumper championship at Christmas or something like that. But I don't think it's possible to do. People trainers have a plan in mind for horses over the course of a season. No one wants to split that season up and go, right, the first half of the season we'll do this and the second half we'll do a different discipline. No one, you see horses switching from hurdles to fences mid-season. You see them running bumpers first time out and then go over hurdles. You don't see many horses who are being aimed at Cheltenham deliberately switch streams halfway through because it's not really helpful as a rule. Sometimes you have to do that because of the situation you're in. Sometimes horses have to switch back from fences because they haven't jumped well enough to go on at that stage. But essentially, trainers need to be given free rein to do what they want with the horses. I understand that there is this... the bumpers have become a little bit too important. And I get that. I mean, bumpers traditionally have been, you know, a schooling ground for horses to gain a bit of experience before they go on to do their real job, whereas bumpers have become an end in themselves in the last 20 years, which wasn't really the case before. But that's just natural... the natural dynamics of the sport, really. You can't legislate for it or against it. It's once you start trying to get involved in how top-class trainers operate, you'd end up weakening the sport rather than strengthening
it. You could make those rules, like you can't run a bumper if you run a point-to-point, but that would lessen the value of point-to-point horses, wouldn't it, Ruby? Straight away, you'd take off...
It might lessen its appeal to different trainers. I'm not saying it would necessarily lessen their value because you're assuming their value has been gained by what they have done. So it might lessen the appeal to who buys them. Like, Willie is a man who uses bumpers and always has. I'm pro-bumpers. That's where I cut my teeth and where I started.
Yes, for the jockeys as well. Let's not forget those.
Career. Yeah. So I started on the track more so than... I didn't ride much point-to-point and I rode on the track. But and it's the development of horses too, and different trainers view it and see it in different ways. Paul Nicholls' approach to bumpers will be completely different to Willie Mullins' approach. Gordon Elliott uses quite a lot of bumpers. Henry de Bromhead, less so. So everyone has a different take on what they want to achieve or what they want to get out of bumpers. Willie uses them for the development of his horses. They're not as probably as hard on horses maybe as some races. Then again, you could say they're twice as hard. I'm not so sure. But look, some trainers use them, some don't. I think they've always been part of the fabric. I think it'd be sad to lose them, but I'm biased. Yeah. I cut my teeth there, so I'm pro-bumpers.
OK, it's a great question, Dean, and there's probably a bit more depth to it, but we'll move on to the Triumph Hurdle. And Rory, I'm going to start with you. The British team doesn't look like there's a huge amount there. Am I missing something?
There may be more there than you think, to be perfectly honest. But there's an interesting question there about the overall depth of talent in Britain at the moment, or indeed the pool of horses being put forward for the Triumph Hurdle, more to the point. And it seems to me, when I looked at this in the first place, I looked at the entries, and the most striking thing is the lack of Triumph Hurdle horses, not just this year, but last year and the year before as well, from Nicky Henderson. And Nicky won this with a horse that we wouldn't even be talking about now a few years ago. When Pentland Hills won the Triumph, he wouldn't have been on anyone's radar at this stage. He won Fontwell or Plumpton, he won his maiden hurdle, you know, only less than a fortnight.
A great pointer before to winning a Triumph, not a trial pointer.
Indeed, yes. So he pulled that one out of left field. But aside from that, he's had nothing in the Triumph in recent years. And Nicky Henderson's been the most successful Triumph hurdle trainer in history. So, bar none. So the fact that Nicky Henderson seems to be in a place where he's no longer concentrating on that, or there is a possibility he's just not getting the horses, but that seems unusual. He has one entry, Arclight, who wouldn't have much of a chance in the Triumph, and it just seems currently he's moving away from that. And the source, the place where he would have sourced a lot of those horses, he had the first, second, and third in the Triumph, not that long ago, and he had horses running in JP's colours and Muneer and Suede, and now we're seeing those colours in different yards. Muneer and Suede there are still horses around Seven Barrows carrying the colours, but they're being spread out a lot more horses with Billy Mullins, a lot more horses with Stuart Crawford. So the owners who are looking towards the Triumph as a primary aim are not really having their horses with those yards that they used to. Alan King probably still interested in pushing horses forward for that. He just hasn't had the right horses in the last couple of years.
He's been running them on the flat. That's why he's been winning good races on the flat.
This is a very good point that the flat is. And again, we're talking about the pool of horses. Most of those horses who would have been deemed ideal for the Triumph Hurdle in decades gone by are now being retained on the flat or being sold to Australia or wherever it happens to be because they're in demand. And there are still we're getting Triumph Hurdle horses from different sources now. But the trainers are picking those horses up. Willie Mullins is the obvious one, obviously, trainer. It has to be said. But in Britain, the trainers who are now looking to focus on the Triumph Hurdle are Milton Harris and Gary Moore. So that's been a big change in culture. And Milton and Gary are pretty keen on picking up those horses, either Classy X flat horses, and of course, and Milton's more than happy to go to Aidan O'Brien for that, as we've seen with Scriptwriter. And Gary Moore picks up good horses for good money in France as well. So they will have Triumph Hurdle contenders. But, Alan King, less likely to than he was 10 years ago. Nicky Henderson seems much less likely to. And that's a big change. And, of course, Paul Nicholls, when he has run horses in the Triumph Hurdle in recent years, he's made a point of saying these are future chasers and they're there for experience rather than having a chance on the race. And that tends to be his outlook on that. Even though he has won the Triumph in reasonably recent times, be interesting if he rocks up with anything at Kempton, but that hasn't been as rich a source of winners in recent years, or certainly immediate winners. They tend to, again, be horses who need time beyond the quick gap to Cheltenham.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how this develops with the so-called known yards. Lossie Mates Ruby, we could perhaps spend an entire episode talking about this race at the DRF. Your take on it, first off.
Lossie Mates was unlucky, ran into a good bit of trouble at the third last hurdle, again at the back of the second last hurdle, and Gallimard saw got a run on her. That is the popular opinion. But I think when you watch the race from start to finish, I'd say Gallimard saw did plenty wrong from the second hurdle all the way till they crossed the road in Leopardstown. She overraced, she was very keen, she was in and out from behind Lossie Mates. Lossie Mates then lost her position when Gallimard saw got in and was in the wrong place. But when you look at it and break it back down, I would say Gallant Marceau had improved since Christmas and Lossie Mates, to me, I don't know what you think, Rory, but to me, to be a short price favourite, you should be able to overcome one or two things going against Shinner S and still win. When you can't overcome one, now I know two went against Lossie Mates, to me that doesn't put you that far in front of the opposition.
Yeah. If she was flying at the finish and she was gathering Gallant Marceau in with every stride, then you'd say very unlucky, but she wasn't gaining ground in the last 150 yards.
Now, without bad luck, would she have won the race? She probably would. But if you're steaming into one, you have to hope that you can overcome some little bit of bad luck and still win. If it needs to go perfect for you, that needs to be factored into the price, I would say.
Willie Mullins created a few headlines with his post-race comments suggesting that it's going to leave a big mark on her, that run, because Paul really had to get after him. Maybe Willie was hoping that he wouldn't have to have for such a big pointer.
I wouldn't have said... so much get after her. He would have expected Paul to get after her to win the race. I would say Willie was thinking, well, she's dropped to last. She's had to run a race to get back into the race and then run a race to catch up. So in his eyes, he'd be thinking she's after running almost two races at the end of one. At the end of one. Will she get over it? She looks 100% since. But how could you tell? It's only 9 days since she ran. She won't have done that much work. When will you know? probably facing up to the last hurdle in the triumph hurdle. Has it left its mark or not? You can't go finding out at home, or you will have left the mark. So, and that's by asking too much of the horse at home and emptying out whatever energy it has. So, look, you'll have to take a chance on that, I'm afraid. And she should be able to get over it. It's 5 weeks. She should be able to recover. And Willie will be conscious of that. He'd be trying to freshen her up as best he can.
OK. We were hoping to see Blood Destiny take her on at the DRF. It was about the only match that we were expecting that didn't materialise. He's still obviously a strong player.
He has. He was very impressive at Cork. He won well at Ferry House. He's had to make the running twice. They were two average races, Rory?
Yeah, I suppose so, you could say that. Yeah. In the context of the spring, certainly.
Yeah, definitely. And he was really, really impressive. I'm a fan of his. I think he's very good. I thought he was very good at Ferry House, whatever about what was going on behind him, but I thought he was impressive.
Does he need to be in the front, or is it a case of those races were just, not that good?
It's a case of he was a short price favourite both days. Nobody was going to give him a lead. No one was going to give him a hand to go about his business. So they were all going to sit behind him and see what they could do. So he just that's just the way that they transpired, I suppose. What will he do come March? Who knows? He could be a better horse getting a toe.
Gallum or so, just reading into your comments, Ruby, from earlier, you suggest that maybe she didn't get the credit she deserved?
I don't think she did, PK. Like, she did plenty wrong. She was very keen. Her jumping got better as the race went on. But I think we all got caught focusing on Lossie Mouth and stopped looking at the winner and what the winner had done. And I thought she did plenty wrong and was still won well, Rory.
Yeah, and again, if you look back at her historic form, her French form, give her every chance of doing that anyway. She's probably a little bit below that at Christmas. And then, you know, it's dangerous to judge a horse on one run, especially when you've got efforts either side of that that suggest she's better than that. So, yeah, I'd give her a fair degree of credit. She wants to settle a bit better. Mm. And whether she's whether there's a slight question mark about her stamina over 2 mile one at Cheltenham is there as well. But that's the case for a few in this race. Mm. But, of course, you know, in the old days, a triumph used to be a real test of stamina. You need to stay 2.5. The way the race was run, and given it's been a smaller field in recent years, that's been less of an issue. Class tends to come to the fore, but the issue you had in the time form in the old days was you either went at the correct pace and then needed luck and running to come through them at the end of the day, or you rode forward and basically did too much early on to stay out of trouble and then hope that you stayed on well enough. And you've only got to look at the finish of Triumph Hurdles in the 1980s to see that.
And 90s up till whenever Fred Winter came in. Yeah. Oh my God.
Bring back the 30 runner triumphs with Scolardi coming up the inside. Lovely jubbly.
You can have them back. I definitely want never again want to experience it.
Rory, we've got form students such as yourself. It's not exactly common, but we've got form lines between Ireland and the UK thanks to Comfort Zone. Thank you, Joseph O'Brien. He's been sent over a couple of times. He's done really well.
Yeah, and the question is whether he's improved appreciably. Since being beaten by Lossie Mouth, and I don't think he has on the form. He's possibly capable of better. He looked like he was going to win well at Chepstow and then made quite hard work of it in the end. And then he stepped up a little bit on that, but still only won narrowly in the Triumph Hurdle trial, the finale. One's the finesse, one's the finale. Chepstow's the finesse.
Chepstow's the finale,
and Cheltenham's the finesse. But is now the Triumph Hurdle trial officially. I thought he got a good ride there. I thought he got the ride that the runner-up should have got.
Mm. We were all on scriptwriter.
But you can see that in Paddy Brennan. 50 yards from the line, he just drops his head. Yeah. Oh, no.
Paddy's accidentally ridden his normal race at Cheltenham. And I like the way Paddy rides Cheltenham. I think Paddy gets a lot of flack for going out wide and looking for his own ground and taking that route so that he gets wide into the home straight, and that actually works a lot of the time. This wasn't the horse to do it on, particularly in a situation where the horse who took him there wasn't going to see it out. It was a 50-1 shot, and he wanted to get the cover that the winner did, and he then got a bit unbalanced after the last as well. And there's this issue about Milton Harris says the horse doesn't want the whip either, and therefore Paddy couldn't go for him in the finish, but he did go for him shortly after the last, which got him a little bit unbalanced as well. I think a lot went wrong for scriptwriter there, so I'm not sure the Comfort Zone had to improve an awful lot. The question with him is, because he wins narrowly, maybe, you know, when he's harder pressed, he'll find a little bit more. So he looks, he's hardy, he's bonny, he probably will take his racing very well. So he might be a player, but in terms of the ratings, he doesn't seem to have come on a chunk since beaten by Lossie Mouth. So he's got that little bit to prove. But, you know, the whole thing about a Triumph Hurdle is you don't judge it by November and December form. You judge about what they're doing and what they're capable of doing in March, and some of these horses will be coming forward. I mean, you've got to bear in mind, we've seen this in recent years, that horses who put up massive performances in November and December tend to be, they tend to get to their peak early and then hold that peak, whereas the horses who are kind of behind that tend to be coming up, and they often meet in March and there's not an awful lot between them, whereas you tend to look at the form book and say, well, X is 7 or 10 pounds better than Y, and it's not always the case.
Would you make a scriptwriter favourite to beat Comfort Zone in a match?
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't be favourite to win, but I'd back him to win that match. Yes, yeah. I think it's reasonably tight. But I think I'd like to see a reasonably big field triumph as well, which obviously that's a bit of a question mark how big it's going to be. There don't seem to be that many UK contenders for it. But I think scriptwriter ridden with cover.
You'll get that. Just picturing it here in my own mind. Do you think Blood Destiny, Lossie Mode, Gallimar, so maybe not Joseph's horse, but you could see those all in front of Paddy off the bend.
And that's enough.
Decent ground by the Friday at Cheltenham. I can't imagine there being a mad emphasis to be on one side of the track or the other. They'll pretty much round off the bend in almost like a triangle, and you can see Paddy sitting behind them and then coming at whatever he can. How close he gets, I don't know.
Yeah, the question is what he will find. You know, that's the scenario he needs. The question is what he will find in that scenario. And, you know, the positives you heard, the positives you've seen on the track. I mean, the one I pointed out when we were looking at that race in the preview was that he'd won on the flat off a mark of 102 at Wolverhampton. And he found plenty up the inside. The pace quickened. He got caught out a little bit. Looked like he was going to finish last briefly. And he's rallied really well to get up on the line and win by a nose. But Milton's comments about him are that he used to be a lead horse for Ian O'Brien's Derby horses, and therefore his job is to lead them, and then when they come past, to think that his job is done. Therefore, he's saying if he's in front for too long, or if he gets tackled, he's learned that his job is not to fight back. That's obviously a little bit of a worry. I haven't seen that in him. I thought the way the Wolverhampton race worked out was completely the opposite to that, because he rallied really well and the form has worked out. You think. The handicap in January, maybe it's not very good form, but actually, it's worth trying. The runner-up has won the handicap off a good mark since as well. And he's not big. Listen, when you see him in the paddock, you won't want to be with scriptwriter compared to some of these, because he's small. He even looked small among some of the horses he was against at Wolverhampton. So there's not a huge amount of him. He's bigger than Milton's horse in the race last year, and I think he'll perform better. I think he's a place candidate. I think he'll probably find one or maybe two just a little classy for him, but he does have plenty of ability, and he's capable of being in the mix on the run. And the question is whether he will, with no whip being waved at him, or I think the whip might come out, what he'll find in the finish.
Before I get selections, I love that angle about he was a lead horse at home. Ruby, is that something that horses learn? Like, lead horses do have to be beaten by the better ones at home, or is it?
Yeah, of course they do. And it's confidence, what you say about a horse winning a race, it does it the world of good, yeah. But Milton will be now using something else as scriptwriter's lead horse at home. Scriptwriter will be passing it out every day and learning to actually put your head in front. This is what we want you to do.
And they can relearn that. It's not a case of you're done.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, interesting. Right, selection time, lads. I know there's a few horses we haven't discussed, so throw them in otherwise, but the Triumph?
Triumph. Hurdle. I'm weak here on this. I don't know. And I don't envy Paul.
Yeah? You think it's a tough decision between, assume, Lossie Mouth, Gallimar, so?
And Blood Destiny.
Would he have something to prove on Lossie Mouth? And would that be a factor for him?
Yeah, maybe.
And he'd go, but I'm riding her and I'm winning on her.
Yeah, but that's pride.
Yeah.
This is about percentages.
No, exactly. I still think it's difficult for him not to choose Lossie Mouth.
Yeah.
And it might be because of those sort of slightly negative repercussions of not choosing her after what happened to her, but I think you're almost painted into that corner.
Yeah.
She will be.
If he were to make an unbelievably brave decision to ride Gallimar so and then get beaten by Lossie Mouth,
which that can happen.
Ooh, that'd hurt, though. But that hurt even more.
Yeah, but that's the way he look at it. Which one of these, I don't know which one will win, so which one of these, if I ride, is going to hurt the least if it loses.
Yes.
It's quite an angle, isn't it?
Yeah, we've had that argument.
I've often had that argument. Sit there and think, like, I don't know which one to ride. Like, and you sit down, you be dead honest. You can have an opinion, but like, you try and pick which one of those. You know what I mean? Like, the Gelding's a very good horse, Blood Destiny.
Yeah. Yeah. Go on then. Okay, I'm going to nail you to one of the three.
You're not nailing me to anything.
I am. I'm nailing you to one of the three. Okay, I'm coming back to you. Rory, give us your
I'll give you one we haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah, please.
It needs to be thrown in there. And I'll deal with its pronunciation as well, because no doubt it'll be called Saint Donat.
Okay.
The French horse, in inverted commas, is actually not a French horse. Bred...
Saint Donuts.
Yes, and yeah.
Okay,
Saint,
right. Not Donuts.
Saint Donuts. It's a village in Wales, and no doubt that's what he's named after, because he's bred by John Williams and his wife Madge. And they had a very good mare called Morello a few years ago. You remember her, I'm sure. She won her first 9 races for Mary Reevely.
Yeah.
And Keith Reevely trained the dam, Q to Q. He also won a few races. And, of course, James Reevely has been riding this, and the Reevely family are closely associated with it. Hugo Marianne trains it. Now, he's already won the French Triumph Hurdle, if you like.
They've already had it.
They actually have 2 championship races for juveniles. He won the Prix de Cambaceres in November, beating
McTeague.
Beating McTeague. That you can argue the form hasn't really worked out, because McTeague was disappointing there. McTeague had actually beaten Saint Donat. and their previous
Saint Duncan Donat.
He's won 6 times. He's won 4 and finished 2nd twice. Very impressive in that. That's the best race for 3-year-old hurdlers in France. He won by 11 lengths. And looked very impressive in doing it. He's in the Triumph Hurdle, and I backed him overnight at 12-1 with Paddy Power, non-runner, no bet, because that's the wrong price. There's a very good chance the French horses don't come over, but the fact that he's got this strong connection, his owner breeders are
Welsh.
They are Welsh, and they've got a strong connection with Yorkshire, obviously. I'm assuming they're Welsh, given they're called Williams and the horse is called St Donuts. They've got a long association with the Reevely family. James Reevely's been riding it. There are lots of reasons why he might come over, whereas French horses tend not to. And he will, again, when you pick up a race card and it's got the ratings in it, I think he'd be top rated for this based on his French form. I think rating French form can be very dangerous. Very dangerous indeed. But by definition, when you look at that and go, ooh, this one's that I don't know much about, seems to be quite good. He's not a 12-1 shot if he turns up. So I've backed him. But Script Rider is a horse I think is an interesting one from an each way point of view. He's more of a place only horse, but he could surprise, and I like the way Milton approaches the game these days. He's bold, he's brave, he knows what he's swinging for, and he deserves to get a few big pots. So Script Rider is the other one I would put up there. But listen, the 3 at the head of the market are the ones who are there to be beaten.
Okay.
But they take a big chunk of the market in betting terms, so I'm looking elsewhere to get a bit of value.
Rory's giving me 2, Ruby. You haven't given me 1. Come on, 1 of the 3.
PK, I'm going to HR. You're bullying me. You don't have to have a bet.
I'm doing my job, trying to get a selection from you.
Gamble responsibly. I can't pick the one.
You don't have to have a bet. I just want you to tell me what wins it.
I can't pick it.
Right, I'll try again, but it's a pass from Ruby Walsh, unfortunately. That's the Triumph done. Onto the last of our races, the Mrs. Paddy Power Chase. Producer Mark wants me to remind everyone who's watching on, or listening as a podcast, or watching on the Paddy Power Racing YouTube to do what, Ruby Walsh?
Watch on the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel.
And click.
I haven't listened to that part. I usually switch off.
I have to say it all the time, so could you please help me out here?
Subscribe.
And Rory, what else do they have to do?
Like and comment.
Oh, you're having Rory's my friend here.
I only know that because my children are constantly asking me if they can comment on YouTube videos. No, you can't.
Simple as that. And if you do comment with a question for next week's episode, you have a chance of winning a £50 free bet. A question we got from Jamie Cunningham next. It is to both of you. Which horses beaten at the DRF do you think will win at Cheltenham? If you say Lossiemouth, Ruby, Ruby Walsh, I will chuck you out here. Never mind HR. So, Rory first. A horse beaten at DRF that could win at Cheltenham.
Well, I've already mentioned one, haven't I? Liberty Dance.
Okay.
Who was 4th in the Paddy Power Mares Hurdle. That is, that is the race at the Dublin Racing Festival that's produced the most Cheltenham Festival winners.
The Paddy Mullins Mares handicap.
Mrs. Miller.
Yeah, just 3 winners in 1
Tell
year.
Me something, girl.
Heaven help us. Yeah. All went on to win at the festival a couple of years ago. So that's a remarkable start for you. So I thought she was interesting.
Is it Liberty Dance or Liberty Dancer?
Liberty Dance.
Okay, Liberty Dance.
Not Liberty Bell. That's the most
important. Didn't say Liberty Bell.
Statler, I wouldn't rule out either. There are plenty of them. It was a meeting with an awful lot of depth. Mm. Worth pointing out that five beaten horses from 2 years ago went on to win at the festival. Mm. And you're going to find that when you get feels that we had at the Dublin Racing Festival last weekend, you were going to get beaten horses coming out and winning at Cheltenham just because that's the way it's set up. So there might not be one or two. There could be a few.
Which pointer, Ruby, produced a beaten horse?
Gaillard and Menil going up to the National Hunt Chase. I think Factophile and a more strongly run bumper. I'd say Appreciated stepping up in trip. I'd say there'd been five in years gone by. Mm. There's three off the top of my head.
Lovely.
I think there'd be loads of horses that didn't win at the Dublin Racing Festival.
You
didn't even say Fasal Vega, and you didn't say Lossie Mate either. Right, so three for you. The great question. That was Jamie Cunningham's question. If you want your question asked next week, as I said, comment on the YouTube channel. Right, we're on to the Mrs. Paddy Power Mares Chase, and Ruby, no better man to start. Willie Mullins, he's won both renewals. At the weekend, we saw Ellie May and Dino Blue. Ellie May, very easy to back and disappointing.
So this is the third edition. It's only the second renewal, PK, because the first one wouldn't be a renewal. Ellie May and...
Oh, my God.
Rory pointed that out to me. You weren't listening.
The cards are just going to come in the air and just going to walk out.
Ellie May hadn't run since Clonmel in November. And I'd say we'll have improved for it. 2 miles are too sharp for her now, anyway. She's gotten a bit older. She definitely wants further. Dino Blue, I thought Magic Days was very good. Dino Blue is only a novice. Magic Days, a second season novice, served it up to her. And even though Dino Blue looked like rallying going to the last, the closer they got to the winning post, the further Magic Days was going away.
Just on Ellie May, because she's defending champion, do you see her being £10, £12 better?
Oh, I'd say she'll be a lot better, but yeah. She's going to need to be.
Yeah,
there's
fair
a couple
enough.
Of good novices. You have Magic Days, obviously. Not sure about the trip for her, but you have a couple of really good novices.
Speaking of, Allegory Devassi, she looks pretty good. She's favourite.
Really good. One concern for her will be that she has a tendency to jump to her right, and she will need to jump considerably straighter than she did at Thurles. But she's a very good mare, unbeaten for Willie. Came from France, fine big mare, brilliant jumper of fence. Some people think she's too brave. I don't. I think she's able to get in when she has to. Her jumping doesn't necessarily worry me, as in her ability to jump, but the direction she jumps in is definitely a concern.
Do you see that at home in Clissutton?
They usually school on Wednesdays.
Yeah, and you're not there on Wednesdays?
No.
Right, okay.
I haven't schooled since I retired. That's a lie. I schooled a couple of times on the Curragh last year, but I don't do much schooling.
Traditionally, then, horses who jump out, do you see it when you're schooling them at home?
You would, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
York Hill always would have jumped left.
Okay, right, okay. Impervious, Rory, just looked very smart, and JP's come in.
Yeah, JP has picked her up, and that looks... it could be significant, given that he has Ellie May as well. She's impressed me. I mean, I've got a slight issue with the front pair in that they're novices, and they will have a penalty to carry because they both want grade twos. So they're not only meeting older horses, but they're also meeting older horses in worse terms. That's the slight concern. Allegory Devassi is almost certainly the most talented mare in the field, but she needs to get over the first three or four fences without conceding ground before you can relax a little bit if you're backing her. Impervious, her jumping's not perfect either, but I like the way she does it. You know, she can be a little bit scrappy, but she goes forward. She doesn't look vaguely like she's going to fall in her races. She doesn't lose ground at her fences either. So even if she's not absolutely right, she finds a way of getting from A to B without losing ground, which is good. And her form stacks up pretty well. She was particularly impressive last time out. So my starting position was, I don't really want to be with these novices having to give weight away. And the conditions of the race are slightly strange in that the penalties are the same for novices and second season chasers. Normally in grade two races, you'll have half penalties for novices. Mm. It's a full penalty. So that statistically counts against them. But the pair of them do look very good in terms of their ability. Magic Days, as Ruby says, comes into that mix as well. I'd be looking at which trainers have deliberately ensured that their good mares have not picked up a penalty. And the one who appeals most in that regard... for me is Jeremy's Flame, who won a listed race last time out, easily beating Zambella, and Zambella ran well.
She's good yards, Zambella.
The last two years she's run well. She was a faller 2 years ago when in contention, and then she fourth last year. Mm. She had most of the running, moved it a little bit too much in front. But she's a good yardstick because she always gives her running. And Jeremy's Flame beat her well. Now, she's 9 now, but she does seem better than she was last season.
Yeah.
And Gavin Cromwell has made sure that she hasn't picked up a penalty, so she'll be getting £3 from the novices. I don't think Cheltenham will be a problem for her. Jumping's good, and the yard is really big in hit form, so I thought she was very interesting.
As hit form.
At around 9-1 behind the front pair.
That's Jeremy's Flame. Ruby Dolcita, would she still have a chance here?
That's a squeak. I think he'll be a solid rest, though. Pink Legend obviously won at the weekend in Exeter. You'll have Scarlett and Dove chucked in there as well. Ellie May. There's the old cohort coming back. You've made a case for Jeremy's Flame, and the novices mixed in with it. I'd say it'll be a very competitive race. I'd be more inclined to go with one of the novices, be it Allegory Devassi or Impervious. I think going up in trip really suited Impervious at Punchestown. Yeah. Her jumping was better. I think the couple of runs over 2 miles will stand to Impervious, but when you watch her in Punchestown beating Journey With Me, that extra half a mile, what is it, not even a mile an hour, a couple of points of a mile an hour slower, really suited Impervious, and that will stand to her at Cheltenham. But I'd be with Allegory. I'd be hoping Paul can get her down the inside of something and keep her straight.
So Paul's going to ride Allegory.
You think it's a slightly better race than last year? I mean, it should have been a good race last year, but a couple of the fancied ones disappointed on the day.
I think it is getting. It's only the third edition of it. I think you're building a team of mares and it's getting better. And I think over time it'll become a deeper race.
Galia de la Toe, a couple of weeks ago on the pod, you were keen on her.
Yeah, well, I think she may well run in the Brown Advisory. She has won at 2 miles at Bangor, 3 miles at Warwick. She's a mare that can vary in distance.
I think Dan Skelton convinces us there.
Yeah.
That she wants a trip. So I think he's liable to stay at 3 miles. And of course, she's another novice who's won a grade two.
Yeah,
so she would have a penalty. Yeah. Fair enough.
And the Brown Advisory, to be fair to it, I've probably seen better renewals of that in times gone by. So I can see why he's maybe leaning that way. But if you look down the line, you could have her for next year's race as well with the novices that are coming on from next season. I think that's a race that will get stronger.
You did let slip earlier, Gaia Domenil, you mentioned going for the National Hunt chase.
I didn't let slip, I only gave him my opinion.
I don't know about that. He said, well, Gaia Domenil going for the National Hunt chase. That's how I read it. Right, selections for the Mrs. Paddy Power Mare's Chase, Allegory Devassi?
Yes, for me, yeah.
Lovely, we got a pick. Happy days, well done. Rory?
I do like Impervious, but I think Jeremy's Flame each way at the current prices is the value.
Lovely. Okay. Don't forget, this is out on the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel every Tuesday at noon. The podcast goes a little bit earlier. Another comment and question, this one from Matthew Taylor. Apologies, Matthew. He said, Rory had a very jazzy shirt on last week's show. Will Ruby do the same for us some week, Ruby?
Yeah, have you?
That's not the jazziest I've ever seen. Inside of the collar.
Yeah, that's jazzy for me.
That's jazzy for you. Okay, well, there you go, Matthew. There's Ruby in the jazziest form he's ever been in.
John Rocha, if you're interested in...
That shirt was John Rocha.
John Rocha.
Is it Rocha?
You're rocking it, all right, yeah.
I don't know. But I can't wait to say St. Donate's. I'm telling you I'm right.
St. Donate, St. Donate, St. Duncan Donuts.
I'd like to get the right sort of Welsh pronunciation of that as well, but I'll ask a few Welshmen during the week. But they'll all call it St. Donate.
Okay.
And there is a place in France called St. Donate. But it's got it's S-A-I-N-T with a dash, like they always do in
France.
Must
be different.
Yeah. So it's clearly not the French version.
This is St. Donate's.
Yeah, very interesting angle
in Wales.
The triumph hurdle.
Probably the Williams' holiday home there.
And they're not even Welsh.
Even though Rory thinks they're from Wales.
They're not even Welsh. They're actually from Bangor or something like that, as in Northern Ireland Bangor. Yes. Right, let's...
You recovered well.
Before you got in there, Ruby, as well. Thanks very much. That's it for this week. Don't forget, we will have some specials up on the paddypower.com Cheltenham section, some of the enhances from the lads. Also, later this week, we're going to have a punters panel show with these two who hopefully are going to be giving grief to all of those of you who sent in questions, and Nina Carberry as well. So watch out for that later on in the week, again, on the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel as well. So that's it for this week. Next week, the big four, lads. Have you got you know what you're going to be tipping up? Ruby, tipping up.
I thought it was the big five.
Oh, no, I've got big four written here
lion,
in the script. The big
elephant.
Four. I am elephant.
Yeah.
Big game.
You're talking about Safari, though.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about Safari. I swear to God. He's the one who wants to go to HR. The big four. The champion hurdle. And all the way through to the Gold Cup with a couple of champion races in between. The stairs and the Paddy Power stairs, don't forget. And the champion chase. So that's next week. So don't forget to get your questions in for the lads on that or shirts or whether Ruby is too mean to me. Until then, folks, we'll talk to you next week.
Fahid's a champion.